Hey, this is Jeff Scott Soto from Sons of Apollo, Soto, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and formerly with Yngwie Malmsteen and Journey. You are listening to and watching Sonic Perspectives.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another interview of Sonic Perspectives. I'm Rodrigo, and my guest today is someone we have featured here many times in our website, and he's always a blast to talk to, the amazing Jeff Scott Soto. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Rodrigo, ¿cómo estás?
Muy bien, ¿y tú?
Todo bien. I'm having, and I'm sorry I'm not on the camera. It's kind of funny. It's the opposite effect. You know, when people were saying, hey, you know what, since COVID, I put on 15 pounds, 20 pounds, and I'm still in my pajamas. I'm the opposite. I'm fully dressed, like I'm ready to go on stage. I lost 50 pounds, and I just don't want people to see me and go, oh, now he looks too good.
Man, I've seen the recent pictures. You're like a vampire. You never get old. I think you stopped aging at like 1995 or something, no?
Man, you know what? I owe it to my father's side of the family. The genes on their side are incredible. I mean, my father's almost 80 years old. He's got a full head of hair. He looks great. He still looks amazing. He doesn't look older than 60, and he's almost 80. So it's, I'm holding on to it. You know, we don't have any plastic surgery on our side of the family. Everybody just, they age naturally, or they look as good as they did earlier. So it's crazy.
So awesome. So awesome.
I love it. I'm so happy. Between that and still having my voice, my God, I finally have an upper hand than my colleagues.
Don't be silly. We are here, of course, to promote your new album, the Duets Collection, Volume 1. It must have been a fun process, right, to revisit songs from your entire career.
Oh, man, you have no idea how much fun it was. It was more fun than I thought it was going to be, because in the beginning, you know, this album came about because I was having a conversation in the beginning of the year with Frontiers. You know, we were still questioning. We're wondering when this whole thing, this whole thing, pandemic and staying at home will be lifted so we can go back to touring, et cetera. And they said, well, it keeps going back and forth. It looks like we have to continue working around it. And by working around it, that means we have to just keep people distracted, even keeping us distracted, giving those guys a reason to keep the business going, giving us artists a chance to have a creative outlet while we're waiting for the world to return to normal. Yeah. We feel a responsibility as well to entertain people and kind of help them forget about all this shit that we're dealing with. It's hard enough as it is. And, you know, we all find our solace and our escape in music. And I wanted to make sure that I was part of that whole process of just keeping everybody distracted, man. And that's what this album is about. It's a distraction. I never meant it to replace anything that I'm normally doing. Mm. It was a fun novelty idea that turned into an amazing fun project in the end. And I'm so happy I did it. I was joking when I called it Volume 1. I was joking like, well, it's Volume 1 in case people like it, then we can do Volume 2 and 3. And now I'm really hoping that people like this enough that I can do more, because, yeah, I mean, Lord knows I have enough songs to do many more volumes, and so many great songs I could revisit with so many great artists. I hope people really like it.
Yeah, I had a question about naming Volume 1. I just assumed that Volume 2 was on the way and that it was already being worked on.
No, you know what? I called it that because I wanted to plant the assumption. Okay. If people think there's going to be more, then it shows them that this is not just a one-off. This is not just a, you know, killing time or trying to make extra money on the side. It's nothing like that. This is, I called it this because I wanted to kind of plant the seed, like psychologically telling people there's more if you want more. So this is Volume 1. If you agree, we'll make more volumes.
Awesome. I've been listening to it nonstop. I listened to it on my run yesterday. Let me ask you specifically about a few of my favorites.
Okay.
First of all, Don't Let It End with Dino Jealousy. What an amazing song. And this guy can sing pretty much anything, right?
Anything. He can sing anything from pop to soul to metal. It's incredible. He's one of the best hard rock singers out there today. And I only say hard rock because a lot of people only know him as a hard rock singer. But I've hung out with Gino for the past 5 years, backstage with TSO, touring together. I know what he can do musically. I know what he could do vocally. He is a monster in every level. He's just an amazing singer, amazing talent, amazing musician, all of the above. And I'm proud to be his friend.
Yeah. And I love Eric Martin too, but I must confess, I had reservations about how your voice and his would blend together because it's two completely different styles.
Yeah.
But Mysterious, man, one of my favorites of the album, turned out perfect.
Thank you, man. You know what? Eric and I also share a lot of the same loves as far as singers and music and styles. So as much as we might be very different, you could put us in a scenario where we're even doing an acoustic show together and you will find a lot of similarities because we're just influenced by a lot of the same things. And that's where the characteristics of even the soulful part of our voices come from. And the same goes for like Richie Kotzen. You know, most people look at all of us as just rock guys, but they don't realize what a deep rooted history we have in influence in black music. So it's absolutely important to the, you know, what we're doing as singers.
Yeah, like Otis Redding, Al Green. I definitely see the seeds of those guys, you know, in your voices. Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And one thing I always wanted to hear was you and Russell singing together. And I know you do the TSO tours together sometimes, but Calling All Girls was a great choice for you to sing together. I love the end result.
Absolutely. And the closest I've gotten to do anything with Russell is the Joel Hoekstra albums because I'm doing all the background vocals to everything he's singing. And at times it's only he and I singing together, but I'm not trading off on lead vocals with him. And that's something I was really looking forward to. But I wish we would have done that on Joel's stuff because it would have been fun. But hey, you know what? We got to do it on my stuff.
Yeah. Maybe an idea for album 3 of Joel Hoekstra. Who knows?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's like, he's no stranger to doing like duets albums either. Like he's done it with Yor Landi and I think Annette Ozon. So maybe one with you, both of you guys. I don't know.
Hey, you know what? This is the best thing about where we are musically right now. The best thing about the fact that our music is not mainstream anymore. We're not on top of the charts. We have more possibilities of collaborating and doing many other things than we were normally would able to do, because back in the day when this music was more relevant and it was more of the mainstream, the labels would say absolutely no. They would pick and choose who you could work with, who you can't work with. And so now it's a little more freedom to be able to express ourselves and actually do stuff together.
Yeah. And speaking of these partnerships, you work with two of my fellow countrymen, Alirio Neto and Renan Zonta. And Edu, the drummer, is also Brazilian.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No wonder your Brazilian fans worship you, man.
And it's I have an EPK that I just finished. And even my video directors and even the people I'm working with behind the cameras they're all Brazilian. So
I have a
really strong connection with the Brazilian people and the culture and more importantly, with what I do for a living. It's amazing how much I rely on the Brazilian side of my musical career now. You know, with Leo Mancini, like you said, Thiago is the guy that's doing all the videos, and Guili is the one that did the EPK. And I'm surrounded by Brazilians.
That's not by design, though, right? That's just how it happened. You
know, it just happened that way. But the more I keep working with them, the more I realize I get more out of them than I feel I would get from some of my fellow countrymen here. I just have a different passion for my stuff. I'm not saying they work harder or better than anybody else. For my stuff personally, I have such a personal connection with how they work and how they work with and for me. So this is one of the reasons why it keeps expanding from the videos to the productions, to the songwriting, to the musicians. It's unparalleled how many Brazilians I'm surrounded by.
That's awesome. Yeah. And speaking of the videos that you mentioned, I love the treatment that you did so far for Don't Let It End and Coming Home, which addresses the pandemic. Incredible to me, like a song written so many years ago can resonate so well with what's happening now.
Well, that was one of the things. I never get involved with storylines or ideas with my videos because I trust Thiago so much with the mm-hmm. ideas he comes up with. He comes up with some great storylines. He even comes up with things that give you another outlook on what the lyrics might be about. And this is what I've learned from him. I always write my lyrics are always in double entendre. I always write something where you might think it's about a relationship, but it's actually about a person with against his, you know, trying to question his religion or his religious beliefs or political beliefs. I could be right. There's a song I wrote for Talisman many years ago called Madison. And I remember getting response like, wow, this girl sounds like she was crazy. And she was putting you through hell. Are you still with her? And I wrote, this is not about a girl. This is about my dog. the dog was a female. So I wrote the lyrics about this dog who basically makes me crazy, but I love her to death. And she makes me want to kill her. It makes me want to scream. But yet I love her with all my life. And that was about my dog. And so I love that double twist that lyrics can give you. You can give you two different stories based on who's reading it or listening to it. And that's what Thiago does. I tell him what the lyrics about. I tell him what they also could be about. And then he gives me another placement, a third placement of what they could be about. And that's exactly what we did for Coming Home. It's in many ways, it was addressing the pandemic and being apart. And at the end, it shows us coming home, coming back together. But I also wanted the entire video, the performance of me and Dean, to be separate. And then at the very end, you see we're actually together and we're coming home as well. So it's a deeper message, I think, than just trying to coordinate the storyline behind a song that, like you said, that was written over 15 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I love that it's not like patronizing like a lot of artists have been doing about the pandemic and how the average person is feeling.
Right.
It comes from the heart. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I try to do that with all. Thiago does it naturally with all of his videos. He's a filmmaker. He's not a music video guy. So his studies and all his training have been for making movies and making films. And that's why even at the beginning of all my videos, it says a film by Thiago Kiss, because it's not it's not a music video for us. To us, it's more important than it, especially, you know, you see a lot of the music videos today. It's kind of boring.
Yeah.
I want to do something that has a little more a little more statement and gives you a little more visual than just watching me sing a song.
Yeah. No, incredible. Yeah. And with songs so different from each other on the album, I bet you put a lot of thought in terms of, you know, the arrangement, the sequencing of the songs on the album. Can you tell me what the process was for this one?
The sequencing is always, for me, the hardest thing. It's difficult to choose what should go where, because to me, everything is just as important as the next or the last. I don't look at the last song on the album being the worst or not being the strongest. I look at all the placements on any album when I'm putting them together with the sequencing. It's got to have mountains and valleys. It has to go up and down, up and down. If it can't have one direction and then all of a sudden go down to another direction and stay there. So I do this. I listen to different versions of the sequencing and the orders because I want the flow to be there according to how it feels and how it fits to me. So that's probably the hardest part. I it's weird. Everybody has their ways of doing it. In the old days, it was always the weakest songs go at the end. And then you think of Queen, A Night at the Opera. Bohemian Rhapsody, besides the instrumental of God Save the Queen,
right?
Bohemian Rhapsody is the last song on side two, and it's their biggest song in history.
Yeah.
it's not about the strongest songs go at the top. It's always about how everything flows from beginning to end.
Right. And what was the process to match each singer to the songs? And was there anyone else you had in mind that you can get so far? Or,
Well, the answer to the first question is I wanted Frontiers to be involved. I like them to be involved as much as possible with my releases, because not only have I been with them, next year is 20 years that we've been working together, and we'll be celebrating a 20-year anniversary. And that's I'm finishing my new solo album now. That's going to mark the release of the 20 year together. I like to get them involved in terms of knowing that they're going to. They're going to get behind it a little more, knowing that they'll get a little more excited if they feel that they're closer to it. So from that, I asked them, give me a master list of songs. Once we confirm we're doing this album, give me your wish list of things you would like me to do. So, and they chose pretty much 80 to 85% of the songs. The other ones I chose or I changed, like for instance, they wanted maybe to do Rockstar's Stand Up. Mm. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? I've done that song so many times on so many live albums and DVDs. If I'm going to do something from Rockstar, let's do the other song that a lot of people know, and that's Living the Life. So little things like that, I changed. And then I made my master list of everybody that I wanted to work with. Both, I mean, it started with first, these are my friends. These are my friends. I know they would do this for me. I know they would never turn me down or say no, except for one. but there's a reason for it. Answering your second question was Richie Kotzen. I wanted to get him on a song on the album. And unfortunately, he just finished the Smith Kotzen thing he was doing. And contractually, he was not able to do anything just yet. And of course, they're working on the new Winery Dogs too. So I understand his reasons for not being able to do it with me. But he didn't say no because he didn't want to do it.
Okay. Volume two is around the corner.
Yeah. You know what? And this gives me a chance to show if people really want this, you know, I'll open up the floodgates with more ideas, and every volume will just get better and better.
Awesome. Man, I think there is a market for this. I hope the volume one, you know, reaches the level of success that you expect so that it warrants a second one. Fingers crossed. You
know, I got this idea to do this record because I sang on a Michael Schenker tribute album a few years ago. Mm. And the tribute album, of course, has different singers doing the different songs throughout his entire career. From UFO to MSG and other things, maybe even Scorpions are on this record. And the difference of this album, even though it was a Michael Schenker tribute, Michael Schenker played all the guitars on it. So basically, he did his tribute album with different singers and remaking the songs. And I thought, wow, what a cool concept. Normally, a tribute album, the artist that they're covering is not anywhere near it. It's just a tribute from other artists. But what about a tribute from the actual artist for the artist? And then I thought, well, I'm not just going to re-sing all of this by myself. That'll be boring. People will say, hey, why did you do this again? I already have you doing it like this already. So I figured, why not doing it with others and give people another perspective of how these great songs in my life and my career, to me, how great they were in my life and how I feel, why not see what it sounds like for these guys to step up and sing them with me?
Yeah, what a great idea, man. Yeah. And I bet that revisiting this material, a lot of memories might have come up. There's a sense of, I don't know, going a trip down memory lane for you, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. When you reflect on that, on your career, would you say you've accomplished what you set out to do in the beginning? Or how do you feel about that?
I think I did a good portion of it. I think I knocked out a good level of what I always intended to do. Unfortunately, I think I'm only halfway there. at 55 years old, I'm only halfway there. I mean, I would love nothing more than to have a break like I had with Journey or to sing for a band like Queen or something that gives me a real shot in the arm for the rest of the world to truly listen to me or want to listen to me, because I know I have a lot of material out there that a lot of people would love. Unfortunately, it just never got, I didn't get the exposure. So all I could do is keep trying, and I'll continue trying because this is what I love to do. And I can't even imagine doing something else in my life at this point in my life.
Right. Well, we're lucky to have you, man. And you're still doing a lot. You did a lot in the pandemic. The solo album, Wide Awake in My Dreamland, came out almost a year ago, right?
Yeah.
This album, also a few acoustic shows with Jason Bieler from Saigon Kick, which are still happening, no?
Yeah. I'm leaving tonight on the red eye to go to Florida. That's going to be fun. We're kind of joking, like, if we don't get COVID from this trip, we must be doing something right. We're still doing them, and we plan to do more. The idea of putting us together and doing what we're doing is starting to blow up. I mean, a lot of the shows are selling out, and as we're slowly getting back to things, this is the perfect vehicle for us to ease back into the live stage, because we don't have to worry about crew or people around us maybe getting sick or having to postpone or having to cancel. It's me and Jason in a car. You know, we do our shows. It's an acoustic guitar and two voices. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I've never witnessed that live, but I've seen the videos on YouTube. amazing shows. Amazing.
Thank
shows.
You, man.
Yeah.
They're getting better. You know, we enjoy them so much. And oh, look at that. I just got a text from Jason.
Awesome. But recently, a lot of shows here in Canada, where I am, have been canceled or postponed. Dream Theater, Megadeth. I think for the time being, only local shows will be okay, right? So touring is testing the waters. And
Touring is difficult right now because there's so many parameters. There's so many moving parts. There's so many people involved. There's so many possibilities of things happening. Already you have all the regular dangers that happen on tours. So it's, you know, they don't want to risk all the insane amount of money that it's going to be lost in trying to, you know, send everybody home and trying to recoup already what we've lost the past 2 years. So everybody's being careful, and some are pulling it off. And unfortunately, some are having to pack it up and go back home.
Yeah. And that happened, of course, with you and Sons of Apollo when you just right in the middle of promoting the second album. Right. And I was lucky enough to catch one of the first few shows of that tour. So is there any talk at all of a third album or doing more stuff together at this point? Or
there's no talk just yet. We have the four shows in South America coming up in January. Mm-hmm. And I'm very sure and positive we're going to use that time together to discuss what the next stages are for the band. I just do know that already, you know, especially somebody like Portnoy, he's in like 50 other bands. He's planning to make up a lot of lost time, you know, going on the road with some of the other things that also had to cancel. So I don't think we'll do more in terms of live dates next year. Mm-hmm. Besides what we already have in South America. I'm waiting to find out. I don't know anything about the European dates. I don't know if they've been rebooked. I know nothing. So I think we're going to have a proper meeting when we get together for the rehearsals, and we're going to figure it out, because of course, like you said, you know, the 2020 album is in 2020. It's already going to be 2 years old by the time we get back out
there. Yeah. Yeah. I'm eager to find out the next steps of that band, man. I love you guys. I've seen you guys live since, you know, the beginning.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Oh, yeah. And it won't be for any other reason than the fact that we're just all trying to play catch up with everything else that we had going in our lives. Sons of Apollo was it was something that we absolutely dove into in a real way. And the only way we can follow up with it is if we follow up with it properly, not just say, well, let's just make an album, piss it out there, and hopefully make a tour. Everything needs proper planning.
Yeah, that makes sense. And can I ask you if there are still plans to continue with the Elefson Soto project, which was announced a few months ago, but I understand a lot of things happened in between.
And you know what? I've been giving David his space. He has to do what he has to do. And, you know, in respect to him and his family. And I haven't even reached out to him. Maybe a couple times we've discussed, you know, that let's just lay low for a while. I'm absolutely sure that we will revisit this, because we did a great record and I'd love for people to hear it eventually.
Right. And last question for me, Jeff. The last time I interviewed you, we spoke about Queen and Freddie Mercury and the influence he had on you. Let me ask you about another singer you admire who recently announced his retirement, David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
I think any singer in the early 80s wanted to be him, right? So can you tell us a bit about his influence on you?
I was a late bloomer with Van Halen. I really didn't like rock. When they broke out, I was still listening to the Bee Gees and Earth, Wind & Fire and stuff like that. I wasn't listening to rock. So it took me probably until they got to the Fair Warning album, the fourth album, where I finally caught the bug, the Van Halen bug. I finally understood it. I finally saw what everybody else was seeing. And yes, I mean, once I saw them live, once I continued following the careers and the albums, especially Dave solo, what an influence. I mean, I realize now how much inspiration and influence he gave me and so many as frontmen, the same way Eddie gave to guitar players.
Yeah.
And David doesn't get the accolades of being a great singer. He gets the accolades of being a great entertainer and a frontman. But you know what? There's so much of what he does vocally. If you really analyze it, it's actually really good stuff.
Yeah.
Some of it sounds like he's just talking his way through it. But, you know, that's where the personality of his voice truly shined. It was the fact that he was putting so much personality into the fact that he's not a singer like Steve Perry or Freddie Mercury. He gave you another level of his personality in the way he sung. So the guy is just, he left an incredible mark in music.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, there's videos on YouTube about people pitch correcting Dave just to show, you know, how awful he would sound if he sang everything note perfect.
Right.
That's the beauty of him. You know, he sang off key a couple of times, but it's awesome. It's just unique, right?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, thanks again for another incredible interview and all the best with the new album, Duets. I'm already hoping for part two or volume two.
Obrigado, Rodrigo. Thank you so much for your time. And thanks for letting me talk to you about this, all this stuff.
My pleasure, man, as always. Thanks.
Okay, brother. All the best.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for tuning in. And I hope you enjoyed this interview with Jeff Scott Soto. The interview is available on many different platforms: YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. Also, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Let's finish off with the song I'll Be Waiting, originally recorded by Talisman, and here's sung by Jeff and the Brazilian Alirio Neto. Take care, and we'll see you next time.
If you need somebody, call out my name. I'll be waiting right by your side tonight.
Upside down, the slamming.